Blake's definitely right about that today, isn't he? All Nats all the time. We got to get into the Caps offseason moves in great detail tomorrow. Only have about an hour with you, and we're done here in about 20 minutes after the Nats whooped the Red Sox 10-2, out-hit them 13-9 at Fenway Park today. Andrés Chaparro hit a home run. I didn't know that was allowed. His first of the season over the monster. Nassim Nunez, speaking of first of the season.
Nassim Nunez!
You know how mad I'd be as a Red Sox fan today if I gave up home runs to Chappie and Nunez?
Why is it just a one in each of those columns right there? What happened?
Man, James Wood, who hits them all the time, hit number 22.
That's more reasonable.
As well, he's a beast. Show's brought to you by the law firm Condori & Murad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probated men. Their attorneys are there to protect you and your family. So go to kmlawyers.com, schedule an appointment with them. Mention us, get a discount. kmlawyers.com. We got to go rapid fire here. I want to bang out a few more calls before we preview Team USA's monster game tonight. Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville. What's up, buddy? Chris, are you there? I'm going to put Chris on hold. We'll come back to him. Let's go to Jeremy and Marshall. Jeremy, you're on the fan. What's
up? Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, gents. Thanks for taking the call. Love you guys. You're doing an amazing job. Super quick. So no intention to be disrespectful at all here. But what this is some alpha studs playing in a combative, aggressive game. This is Cade Cavalli sitting down in a swing and miss or just a swing and look strikeout. He is not being, I'm not in his head, but I don't believe he's being the kind of disrespectful that is being thrown upon him. What I believe he is doing is being the exact kind of sports alpha disrespectful of, yeah, I got you.
Right. This was my point, Jeremy. Yeah. It's emasculating. You're sunning him, is what I call it. Mm-hmm. You're condescending to. You're tapping him on the head. You're doing the, like, there's actually a celebration people do where they, like, put their hand down by their knees, like, you're this
too small. Yeah.
Yeah, too small, I guess it would be called. Yeah. It felt, that's how I perceived it. Again, different backgrounds, different perceptions. I'm willing to acknowledge that. I just keep coming back to, are we sure? It's a big, big thing to say. Like, you're slamming the gavel on him, telling me he needs to be suspended and there's no place in the sport for this. That feels like a lot. That feels a bridge too far for me. Timmy's in D.C. What's up?
Hey, Tim.
Hey, what's up? I'm going to say this, and this is from the bottom of my heart. This is a black man speaking. This is from the bottom of my heart. Y'all can explain who Wilson Contreras is and whether he intended to say that. You can say that all you want. But what you got to understand is the N-word and boy are racist words that the man owners use to belittle black people. Okay, that was the words they use. So I don't care.
I know what your point is.
Terribly, terribly sorry for that.
No, that's okay. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you're trying to make a point.
Yeah. So y'all can explain it, but you will never understand until you've been called that in a situation where you were just trying to be yourself and have fun.
So, Timmy, this call is heartfelt, and I appreciate it. I actually think that you're right. I agree with you. I can't possibly put myself in your shoes, okay? I am very empathetic to what you're talking about. My question to you is,
okay,
does the context matter? That's what I'm trying to get to. For you, it sounds like no. Agree with you. If a police officer walks up to you and you put down your windshield and he goes, "Where you going, boy?" Exactly. I completely agree. Cade Cavalli pitching to Wilson Contreras and saying a word that to me was synonymous with B or A or D or any other word he could have used, I'm saying I don't think he is saying it that way. Is your point that it doesn't matter because he's white and Contreras is a minority?
It don't even have to be white. It could be like a black man and be calling me the N-word, where he could say that I'm doing it. Why are you acting like an N-word? You know, it's how you use it. And sit down, boy, that's a command. You know, sit down, boy. You know, that's a command.
If we're at like in society, but have a seat on the bench, you know what I mean? Like, that's not how it would roll off the tongue.
So you wouldn't, like, playing pickup basketball, if you're just, you know, watching dudes play pickup basketball, doesn't matter the race, you would feel the same way if someone, like, blocked the shot and then yelled, like, get out of here, boy? You would feel the same way.
But that's totally different. If I'm playing, who am I playing? If I'm playing with, say, like, I'm playing with some white guys.
Yeah.
And I go up and he blocked my shot and he say, get that ass out of here, boy. I'm going to feel some type of way.
Yeah. So that's my question. Then your point is the context is fairly irrelevant. The term is unacceptable.
And I think Wilson Contreras even said it yesterday. Sometimes it's the way it's said. You know, it's the way it's said.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, to me, it's, again, it's the way it's said is the emphasis is on sit your ass down. That's the point here. To me, it's S talk.
And his point is you just can't say boy. That's his perspective.
Right? And again, I you know, the if Wilson, again, it's totally different animal to me, but it is what it is, I suppose. But Wilson Contreras is from Venezuela. The historical context that Tim was talking about, very different to me than Venezuela, right? I mean, or a Latin American experience, something. Not that they say they've never experienced racism or untoward actions from the majority, et cetera. But like that context and history, Tim's heartfelt sharing with us, which I appreciate. To me, it's like, okay, so now does that apply to if I'm someone that's light skinned from Azerbaijan, or if I say something to someone from Egypt or Japan or anything under the sun, like now you simply can't use the word. So, which is very different to me, again, like, because there's so many contexts where you can and it's fine. Hey, attaboy, good job. Is that insulting? To me, it's closer to that than saying, you can't sit here or you're not welcome here or any of the horrible historical things that we're referencing.
I appreciate that call, though, genuinely, from the bottom of my heart. Chris, Hyattsville, what's up?
All right, can you hear me this time?
Got you, buddy.
Apologize.
All good.
Yeah, I got the team mobile. I'm not going to debate the racial overtones or whatever. Everybody's right, everybody's wrong, whatever. This is the thing about baseball right now. In the spirit of let the kids play, let people have fun, it's just an entirely skewed thing towards offensive celebration versus pitchers. Baseball is the only sport where after scoring via home run, there's a rule requiring you to perform a ceremonial parade around the bases, which allows players to conduct all types of histrionics, dap up the first base, third base coach, dance on their way to home plate, and the pitcher can't even start the next pitch until that's completed. When a pitcher does something great, like strike out the side or punch out someone who had previously been chirping him, they don't have that built into the game. So I feel like, yes, you could say let the people play and let's celebrate, but when these celebrations get out of control, it's like you said earlier, if Wilson Contreras is going to do what he did with that home run, he's got to be willing to, the offensive players have to be willing to accept when the pitcher and other team celebrate likewise.
Yeah, if you take the term out of it, right, and the phrase that we're kind of analyzing and breaking down like it's game film at this point, the sit down boy, if you take that part out of it and you just talk about what happened from a sports standpoint, I just need the players that are the S stirrers, that do the most agitating, to be able to take it back. And that's not that different than life. If you're the guy that's mixing it up and zinging buddies and joning, you've got to be able to wear those too. You can't just be the one that's always making fun of everyone. And then when it comes back at you, you can't hang. You get the face and you automatically are like, well, don't go there. No. You got no problem throwing darts. You got to be able to take a few. Wilson Contreras has proven over many, 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 many years he is incapable of that. He is an esterer. He is an agitator. He is a guy that will dish, but he will not take back. That's just a fact. That's from a baseball standpoint, that is the book on him around the sport. Teak in D.C., what's up?
Hi. Listen, I'm going to put a different perspective on this. I'm an elementary school teacher, and I work with kids all the time who say words to each other that the other one says, oh, so they said this to me, and we have to, you know, talk to them about it.
Oh, I believe it, yeah.
Learn, right? And so racial stuff comes in there, right? And so we have to teach the kids how to listen to your friend tell you you said a word that hurt them or that they didn't like, and how to care about that. Care about that. Make the apology and don't make the excuse. You can tell me all your excuses, but don't tell all your excuses to your friend. Just care about that and tell them you're sorry, right? We teach that. Kay Cavalli is a power of example. He's grown up. He's gone through it, and he's done it as a power of example for America right now on how to handle maturely this kind of racial doo-doo that you stepped into. And he did.
Well put.
He did step into it, right?
Yes, and he apologized to your point. And thank you for the call.
Great call. Thank you.
We're moving on. But no, it's a great phone call, and it's a great perspective on, you know, very real world way that she deals with all this all the time. I would add that what you're saying is true. He apologized. The notion, like, it's different than being labeled something, though. When we say a wide receiver had a bad game, that's different than saying that wide receiver is a bad player. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah.
Cade Cavalli's, the thing he did, if you don't like it, is fine. It doesn't mean he is a racist, right? Which is what he was labeled yesterday or what have you. And the idea that he should have been ejected, wrong, that he should be suspended, wrong, like, that's where you will lose me every single time. If you want it ripped out of his lexicon, he's already said that's going to happen, he won't be saying it anymore, then he's willing to do that. He didn't mean it that way. As you said, like, at your school, it made someone feel a certain way, I'll stop saying it. But the idea that he should be suspended for this, I mean, come on, no. I can't go there. All right, we got a big soccer game tonight, Danny. The United States of America. Jack Collins is with us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Jack, I was joking with Danny earlier. I said how America fares tonight is going to shape the way we feel about soccer in this country, one way or the other. No pressure, boys.
Yeah, I think it's for the next couple of years at the very least, right? Like, it does feel like this is a big one. And look, we've talked about this before and where the par is, right? I think we said the round of 16 feels like par for the course. Anything below that would be a disappointment in some regards. And when you get a tie like this one, and look, that's not to disparage Bosnia. They're a very well put together side. They are hard to break down. We saw that in that opening game against Canada. But when you actually kind of look at it down the line of, you know, if you were looking for an opponent in the last 32 who you thought you could get the better of, even if the US have a dreadful record against European teams in knockout competition, this is about as kind as you could have asked for. And I think that it's going to be very interesting to see how they go about their business tonight. But I think you're right. There's a weight of legacy. There's a weight of history. There's a weight of viewpoint and growing the game on this. And all of those things can weigh on the players. All you can say is that you hope it doesn't, right? You hope that this is seen as an opportunity rather than a burden. And I think they will view it that way.
Jack, I do the nervous fan thing where I've now talked myself into that every Bosnian player is Pele incarnate and they're invincible and how are we ever going to get the ball past midfield, etc. But there is some talent there. Esmir Bajrakterević plays for PSV Eindhoven, where Serginio Dest is world class. They've got some pieces here that makes them dangerous, maybe especially on set pieces. I feel like the counterattack's in play tonight. Just kind of give me your scouting report of how the U.S. will break it down and try to attack this Bosnian team.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bajrakterević is a really interesting one, right? Because he came through the New England Revolution Academy. He played a senior game for the U.S. against Slovenia in a friendly before he decided that he wanted to play for, you know, the motherland, if you will, of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And look, that's fine. That's just one of those things. But I think that what's going to be interesting is we saw Bosnia in the first two games of their group effectively play very defensively. You know, a four-man back line that was hard to break down, and they didn't push too far out in terms of transition, in terms of counter-attack. there wasn't all of that really to be seen in the same kind of way. And then in their final game against Qatar, where they needed to win to go through effectively, we saw them effectively hit the gas pedal. And they played Bayraktarevic on one side, they played Ali Begovic on the other. They're two really exciting wingers. And up top, they have the old man of this group, but a very, very talented old man in Edin Dzeko, who's still plying his trade in the second tier of the Bundesliga now, the Bundesliga 2, for Schalke, who he helped get promoted. He is still very, very dangerous in terms of a box threat. But I don't think that Bosnia are going to try to really, really play heavily in transition. I think they're going to try and block this up. I think they're going to try and make it very, very difficult to break through. And they're going to look for set pieces where they are so aerially dominant. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Bosnia and Norway are the joint two biggest teams in this tournament. So they're going to have advantages in those situations. Although I think the US are better equipped to deal with that than Canada were in that first game. What's going to be interesting, I think, for me, is we've seen the US start really fast in all three of their games. And even in the Turkey game, where they ended up losing, you know, in a game that didn't matter, right? A dead rubber, all the changes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you can kind of write off the result. But they started fast in that game again. Austin Tristie scored after a couple of minutes. We saw it in the game against Paraguay. We saw it in the game against Australia. And this, obviously, today is in San Francisco. We're going to be seeing them in a new stadium with a crowd that haven't necessarily seen them yet. There's a level of excitement about that. But the question mark I have is, what happens if the fast start doesn't play out in the same kind of way? What happens if the goal doesn't come in the first 20 minutes, which is something that we haven't really seen from this US side today? I think that they're going to be, you know, very, very front-footed. I'd imagine, you know, the team news is out in half an hour or so. But I think they will go to try and break this team down early. And I think for me, the way that they do that is fast transitions in the final third and fast kind of movements, interchanges in those areas. We think that Christian Pulisic is going to be fit to start. We know Weston McKennie is fit to start. You can get those players into the areas that they were in that first half against Paraguay. The interchanges between all of them, Flo Balogun up front, Pulisic, Dest playing high up on that right-hand side. I think that's where the US can have joy, pulling this team around, because whilst there are talented players within this side, and I would look to the centre-back, Muharemovic, he was suspended for their final game because he was sent off in their game earlier in the group stage, but has had an unbelievable season at Sassuolo, one of the highest-rated young centre-backs in Europe. I think Inter are probably going to buy him, so he'll be playing for the champions of Serie A next season. But I think that if you can pull that back line around and if you can get players overloading in those areas in the way that the US did in those first two games, they shouldn't have any problem finding gaps in this defense. Whether they can take them in the same way is always a different question. And whether they can deal with the aerial bombardment is another question entirely. I would say cut that off at source. Don't let them win silly soft free kicks in the final third. Try to avoid them finding spaces to win corners, etc. If you can stop the source, you effectively stop the flow of goals. And I think that could be very interesting to see how it kind of plays out and how front-footed the US are today.
Host of SiriusXM FC football show, Jack Collins, on Grant and Danny. We're about an hour and a half away from the United States and Bosnia. I was going to ask you for your game plan. You kind of gave that. If you want to get into more detail, that's fine. But X factors for the United States, who are some players that you think are particularly important to watch?
Yeah, I mean, look, the return of Pulisic is always, you know, a big one, right? And the US are a better team when he's on the pitch, one, and when he's flying, even more so, right? And I think that combination down that left-hand side with him and Anthony Robinson could be very, very crucial, because that seems to me like the space where Bosnia might leave gaps. And if they can exploit those spaces, they're going to find overloads in those areas. And I think that will be like the place that they can find joy early on. But I think one to watch is Malik Tillman. He sometimes goes underrated in this US side, I think. He plays a slightly more withdrawn role for the US than he has done for his clubs here in Europe. But I think that what he does, his ability to sort of pick a pass out over the top, to turn defenders around, to try and float in Flo Balogun, who's running and kind of off-ball movement game, I think is really crucial to the way that the US are going to work here. If you can get if you can get Malik Tillman on the ball early doors and start getting him to pick those passes, what it does is it forces a defense, especially a defense playing in a slightly lower block, to play further back, because they don't want balls going over the top for someone as fast and explosive as Flo Balogun is to get in behind them. And if you do that, what you do is you open up space for the likes of Pulisic, for the likes of McKennie, for the likes of Dest, to be able to exploit with those kind of little combinations in those pockets. And I think that if Tillman can get on the ball and start to really pull this team around, to really start to dictate and dominate this game, that might well be the thing that opens up the game a bit later on for this U.S. side. So one to watch from me, I think.
Jack, what subs might you anticipate? Just kind of given if the lineup goes as we think for the U.S., who might come on and maybe provide a jolt if needed?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's the option, I think, of going two up top, because we saw Ricardo Pepi come in and start in the game against Australia. And I think that worked far better than anyone kind of gave it credit for. Everyone was a little bit scared about the absence of Pulisic. And actually, the two of them worked really nicely in tandem. It was a change of system, a change of shape. And I think it gave Australia problems that they didn't expect necessarily to be facing with this US side. So if it gets to that point where it's still 0-0 at 60 minutes, or God forbid, things are not going the way that they should be, and it is 1-0 down, I think that Pochettino will feel that he can push to that two up front system. And if he does that, then there are options in there to make things happen. The other one, I suppose, is Sebi Vahalta. Now, there's a chance that he starts in this game, because I thought he was the best player on the park in the US's loss to Turkey, when that kind of rotated side. And what Sebi Vahalta gives you, I think, more than anyone else in this squad, is an unbelievably reliable dead ball delivery. And whether that's a corner, whether that's a free kick, he just seems to be able to put it on a sixpence every time he steps over a ball like that. And a player like that in the latter stages, we know that the US have, you know, weapons in those areas. Alex Freeman, we've seen Chris Richards in those areas scoring before as well. Flo Balogun is very, very aerially astute as well. If they do need to find something and the game plan isn't working in the same kind of way, I wouldn't be surprised to see Pochettino turn to Sebi Vahalta, just in terms of making sure that those deliveries are absolutely where they need them to be. And if you can cause that kind of chaos, the chances are that you might be able to find opportunities to stick the ball in the back of the net.
All right, Jack, give us the reel here. We don't need to hear what we want to hear. Tell us whatever you think, but what's your prediction for tonight?
I do think that this will be the toughest game that the US have had yet. And I think that Bosnia will prove a more difficult threat to break down than Paraguay did in that first game. Look, Paraguay have vastly improved since they played the US, and that shouldn't be taken for granted. But I think that they will find a way. This is a team that seemed to have something about them in terms of, you know, understanding what this means, but not letting it weigh them down, making sure that they know how to trust their own system, trust the players around them to make the right decisions and make things happen. I'm going to say that the US win it. I'm going to say they win it 2-1, but it just gets a little bit uncomfortable at the end, and they're hanging on a tad.
Whoever wins this game, whether it's the US or Bosnia, who's a better matchup for them as they're playing an extra time now, Belgium or Senegal?
So, well, it's a funny one, because Belgium were outplayed for 80 minutes of this game. Senegal absolutely tore them to shreds. And then suddenly they scored 2 goals in 3 minutes and everything's looked weird. I think Senegal are a better side than Belgium. And I think that they also maybe have the kind of physical maturity to be able to match up to the US in a slightly different way. And I know that they played in a pre-tournament friendly. I think you can probably write all of those bets off, right? Like, I don't think that's necessarily something that they will be looking to, although there is an understanding of a team in some ways, which is important. Like, I think that Senegal would arguably be a more difficult test for the US than this Belgium team, who, whilst talented, just seem to be struggling physically, I think, with the age of maybe the golden generation that's just passing. I feel like the US, despite losing to them back in March, would probably have a little bit more joy right now against this Belgium team than they would do against Senegal. So I'd suggest that, you know, the US probably want Belgium to go through. For the good of the competition, I would probably argue that Senegal have been the better team here and deserve to win this game.
Great information.
Love it, Jack. Thanks.
Jack, thank you. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the matches upcoming.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you. See you soon.
Yeah, he's always great. Jack Collins with us here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. It's nerve-wracking going into tonight, because a loss and this whole thing is over, and all of the excitement of the first two games feels like it was much ado about nothing.
A World Cup favorite, Germany, done. England was dead in the water for 75% of their game today. World Cup favorite, almost out. They ended up winning. The Netherlands, a top team in the world, gone. Like, this is now the scary part. Yay, group stage, that was so much fun. Oh, my God, it's agonizing. The first time the ball hits the crossbar or doesn't go in, you're going, oh, my God, will it ever happen again? This is both fun and agonizing.
We will be discussing the game quite a bit tomorrow. Show starts at 2 o'clock. We'll have a full 4+ hours with you on the Fan. We'll also be breaking down free agency day one for the Capitals. They were very, very busy today. Looking forward to chopping it up about that. With Danny, Grant Paulson saying so long and enjoy your evening. Big thanks to Darris Dameron for his work on the show today here in studio. Ben Strober, who was poolside today, cutting some clips in the sun and the heat, probably in his trunks, possibly even in the pool.
No one knows. No one knows, Randy. You could probably do work from the pool.
That's a rule. When you are the video producer of our show, you have to work by the pool when we do short shows, and only at the same pool at the same apartment
same
complex.
Same apartment complex in Arlington.
In Arlington.
Yeah.
So one day we'll get the invite. Until 2 o'clock tomorrow, we'll chat then. Nick Ashew's got overtime next.
Thank you for coming.
Just when you thought the NBA was quieting down, boy, did we get a doozy right before the show. We got the World Cup. I mean, it's going on now, but we got U.S. men's national team playing at 8 with Bosnia. That kickoff is in. LeBron leaving the Lakers, and the Lakers instantly spending a ton of money. I've checked today also, no Brandon Ayuk. He has not posted anything on Instagram, at least as far as I know, over the last few minutes. So there's that. And it's hot as hell outside. So there's a lot of that going on here, too. Look, I don't want to be the guy. I'm just going to say this for a minute here, though. Because I know it was bitter cold this winter. One of the coldest winters we've had in a long time. Right? Like, I don't want to be the guy. You know, people like, hey, you remember all the ice encased snow we've had? I get it. That's always the counter to this. But you know what? Too hot can be too hot. I have a hot take, and I know I'm not the only one that feels this way. It's great when you're young, but summer's overrated. You know what the best is? Spring. Spring doesn't get enough love, and we don't get enough of it around here. It's 1,000 degrees, and I can't cool off. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a fat guy. I'm not somebody that, you know, sweats easily necessarily. I'm hot, and I've been hot all day. That's it. I feel better. I'm good. We're here. We're fine. Right before the show, though, this broke. And if you haven't seen it, guess what? We got a big shakeup in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. An Eastern Conference, too, that has been very, I mean, beyond the Knicks has felt very, very wide open as soon as we hit the offseason, right? I've said this a lot. I don't think the Wizards are obviously going to be in. We're not talking about them as contenders anytime soon yet, but they're a team that should be in the playoff picture. They're a team that should be talked about as a playoff team next year, especially with the money that they just gave Trae Young. But the Boston Celtics, breaking news. Do we have a breaking news thing? Because we didn't actually, this wasn't in the update yet. It just broke. Do you have a, PJ, do we got it? West, do we got it? I think we need that for this, because this is pretty damn big with what's going on. And yes, I'm putting you guys on the spot, but it's fine. You're both there. This is good. I got two guys. Let's hit that breaking news liner, please. Jaylen Brown has been traded to the Philadelphia 76ers for, get this, Paul George, 2 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks. So the Celtics, who knew they were going to move on from Jaylen Brown, the minute Jaylen Brown was in the conversation for anything involving a trade, specifically Giannis, and then that didn't happen, and he was basically saying he didn't want to go to Milwaukee anyway, and that's part of the reason why the trade didn't happen. We all knew, right? It's one of those situations where you just know it's broken. There's no way the relationship can continue. Jaylen Brown has been nonstop trade conversations. 10 to 12 teams were interested. Then it's the stock isn't really that high. We don't know what to believe. Lying season continued on into the offseason here in the NBA. And now Jaylen Brown is a Philadelphia 76er, according to Shams Charania, because who else? There's only one person that breaks NBA news anymore. That's it. Everybody just feeds him the information. It's the easiest job in the world. Copy and paste the text, put it on Twitter, and you're good to go. Paul George goes to the Celtics for 2 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks. The Celtics saw their title window close with that title-winning roster that they had, the championship team that they had. They saw that window close when Jason Tatum tore his Achilles against the Knicks in the playoffs last season. Not the playoffs we just had, obviously, but the previous season. Because, you know, in that offseason, they traded away a bunch of guys. They cleared some cap space. I know the team was going through a sale and all that, so they were trying to do that anyway. But it was very obvious at that point. They looked at this roster and said, why are we spending all this money on a team that can't win next year because our best player is out with a torn Achilles? And then they shocked everybody. And then all of a sudden, you're watching the Celtics this past season going, whoa, I guess they can still play. And Jason Tatum was in the MVP conversation, and rightfully so. Had a career year. Then Jason Tatum comes back. The Celtics have a 3-1 lead on. Who was it in the playoffs? Let me remind you. That would be the Philadelphia 76ers. So if you can't beat them and you blow a 3-1 lead to them, you might as well give them your second-best player in a trade and take on their injured, past-their-prime star in Paul George and take a bunch of picks back. I mean, this shows that Jaylen Brown's stock was not very high. That's what this tells you. Because if you're Brad Stevens, who runs the front office for the Celtics, who's very smart and just won Executive of the Year, this is your best return. Now, the first round picks are nice, and your hope is that the Sixers, bottom out in a few years, and you're going to be able to get some decent value out of those, especially now. First round picks are a little more valuable because of the smoothed out lottery odds, right? So that's going to make first round picks a little more valuable for really free agency that's been kind of up and down. It hasn't been overly exciting. There have been some signings, but, you know, nothing major. We don't have the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving going to Brooklyn like we had back in, 2019. But Jaylen Brown goes to the Sixers just minutes ago. This broke for Paul George going now to the Celtics. Two firsts, two seconds. The salaries match, so that's pretty much where it's going. And this is a shakeup in the East. That's what this is. This is a shakeup in the East for a Celtics team that realized that their window had closed with that previous team that had won a title. And Jason Tatum is who they want to continue to build this team around. Jaylen Brown, you thought you were selling high, but if this is as high as it gets, then Jaylen Brown never really had a high stock around the NBA. Maybe the Wizards should have gotten involved in this. But what this means now for the rest of the Eastern Conference, plus Martino Puccio previews the Bosnia-U.S. game that's coming up at 8. He'll be on with us in about 20 minutes or so. Here, Nick Ashew on The Fan. Five, six, seven, eight, nine, who knows how many years, right? The way those organizations are built, the way they're built for the future. If you look at the East right now, I mean, every single team has a level of question marks, with the fewest obviously being the Knicks, but Detroit now just lost Tobias Harris, and Jalen Duren's a restricted free agent, and they need someone else that can score. The Sixers and Celtics now just swap guys. I mean, Jaylen Brown's a good player, but does Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Vijay Edgecombe, I think that's a solid team, but we saw what happened to them in the playoffs last year. Joel Embiid played the best basketball of his career. He came back and then brought the Sixers back from a 3-1 deficit, against the Celtics, the team they just made a trade with, and then we watched that same Sixers team get swept by the Knicks, again, playing historic basketball at that point. But, I mean, the Magic are a mediocre team. The Raptors got Kawhi. Maybe they make a jump this next season in the NBA, in the East. Miami's got Giannis. I know you're saying, Nick, what about Miami and Giannis? Yeah, what about them? They gutted that roster to go get Giannis. So that doesn't make things any easier for them. So I'm not saying that the Wizards are in a spot where you look at the Eastern Conference and say, yeah, they got a chance to be a top three seed. Not yet. But what I am saying is, if A.J. Abanza is the guy he's supposed to be, and Trae Young lives up to that contract, which is a big if, and some of these other young guys on the roster, Trey Johnson takes a big step, Alex Sarr comes back. I swear I almost said Alex Len. I swear I will never do that again. Alex Sarr comes back from the foot injury and is healthy and ready to go for the start of the season and shows another level of growth. Like, there's a lot of young players on this Wizards roster, and I know Anthony Davis is a question. That's kind of in its own world right now. But if this team takes that next jump with some of the other guys they've got on the roster, I mean, the Wizards could be a team that might be even out of the play-in tournament and, a sixth seed in the East. Now, I know that's not easy. You'd say, well, Nick, they won 17 games. Yeah, but we've watched teams make massive jumps in win totals before. We just watched the Pistons 2 years ago triple their win total. We've watched the Spurs do that. We've watched the Thunder do that, take these big jumps and wins, 40 to 57, 34 to 62, whatever. Like, it happens. It happens a lot. Things come together. Guys work in the offseason, put in all of that work, get better. The Wizards have had strong player development. That's why they've kept their head coach. He's good at that. Like, I don't know whether we're going to, how long that lasts, but this is a team right now in the Wizards that at least can look at an Eastern Conference and say, like, There's nobody you look at and say, God, we got to deal with them for the next half decade. really, I mean, maybe the Knicks can keep this roster together if they want to spend, but I mean, we've already seen now there was already a sacrifice. Mitchell Robinson went to Boston. But, like, I mean, the Celtics roster is Mitchell Robinson at center, and you got Jason Tatum and Derek White, and I mean, it's an okay team. The Sixers have some talent. Look, the Sixers got better. It's no question the Sixers just got better in this Jaylen Brown trade, but is that enough? I mean, the East is going to feel very spread out next year. It's going to feel like a lot of teams together that are kind of grouped up as we get to the end of the season, and the Wizards could be in that mix in the bottom, you know, bottom half of the playoff picture there. Again, a lot has to come together for them, but we're past the point now of like, ooh, fun team, Wizards, yay. No, this is real now. Like, the expectations are a lot higher, and I'm sure they all embrace it, of course. But that's what we're looking at now. Again, Jaylen Brown traded to the Sixers. Paul George goes to the Celtics with 2 firsts and 2 second-round picks. We'll preview the U.S.-Bosnia game that's coming up at 8 with Martino Puccio next, who also just so happens to be a Celtics fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. U.S.-Bosnia coming up in an hour when they kick off. And they actually kick off on time, too, which is nice. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We'll talk to Martino Puccio in a minute. Sixers, though, trading for Jaylen Brown in the last 30 minutes. Shaking the NBA world right now. Turning it upside down. Jaylen Brown goes to the Sixers for Paul George. 2 firsts and 2 second-round picks. Now, Martino Puccio is the host of that Milan podcast. But he's also a huge Celtics fan. Now, I can't repeat the exact tweet that you put out there, but I see, Martino, you can't be happy with this trade that the Celtics just pulled off.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having me on. No, pretty stunned by that because I put my phone down for 10 minutes, and naturally it's during that. Yeah, initial reaction is to who, for what, and that's really kind of what it is for me is – bolstering Philly and making Philly that much better. I think it came to a point that we all knew everything that was happening publicly or, you know, these kind of vague postings on social media that Jaylen Brown wanted out, and Boston, according to reports, were trying to get rid of him as much as they possibly could. I think the people reacting to the Paul George thing, that's clearly a salary swap. You have to eventually take on a player with that big of a salary for Jaylen to go there. There wasn't anyone on that Sixers roster that they were taking back that Philly would do that deal. The picks are the other problem because it's reportedly the better of the swap between the Clippers pick and Philly's pick, which is obviously something that was highly coveted. I'm not sure if Boston stops here. Maybe they try and go back in on the Trey Murphy side of things. Maybe they try and dump Derek White and try and collect more assets for a different player. I'm not really sure what the move is right here for Boston, but I am just stunned it went to Philly. I'm not stunned that he got traded in general.
Does that tell us that there might not have been as much interest in Jaylen Brown as initially thought? Because then there were reports that, like, his stock wasn't as high in the trade market.
I agree with that, but I also don't think that there was many teams out there that maybe Boston would have liked to have traded with. Because you just see, like, all these other moves that have happened, and what Denver was one of those teams that was highly interested. I'm not really sure that they had more. I probably would have definitely wanted Jamal Murray in this case and situation. But that also leads you to believe that Brad Stevens has maybe some other ideas up his sleeve. I'm not really sure what happens from here. I don't know if they get back into the Jalen Duren conversations with a trade swap, potentially. Maybe they send Derek White that way. I have no idea. It's confusing because Jason Tatum is still in his prime, regardless, coming off of the Achilles injury. You would think that they wanted to keep pushing with this window. But ultimately, people have to remember, they were up 3-1 against Philly. They did not have a great front court. And Jaylen Brown and Derek White did not play well. And that was just the first round against the Philadelphia 76ers team that got swept by the Knicks in the next round. There is a lot of question marks with that. And Tatum's long-term health, I'm sure, is in question for Brad Stevens and the Celtics. And maybe the best thing to do right now is hit a reset in this. I don't think the return is good. I will say that. Ultimately, it's going to hinge upon what happens in 2028 and 2031. But at that point, Jason Tatum is well into his 30s, so I'm not really sure what happens from here. But I do know one thing for sure. The Sixers have catapulted themselves into a top three conversation in the East because they are pretty much loaded at almost every position now.
And yet the East still feels so wide open, which is crazy. I mean, even the Knicks. The Knicks lost Mitchell Robinson. They needed a, you know, a rim protector, all that. So it's, you know, it's just crazy to see the where the East is. And I, you know, listen, we are in D.C., Martino, and I'm not putting the Wizards in that category yet. But I do think that it does. I do think it does at least give the East a little bit more of a flexibility in terms of, you know, where they could go. So, all right, I did bring you on originally to talk about the U.S.-Bosnia game that's coming up. Martino Puccio with me, host of That Milan Pod, Game Day Garage as well, Game Day Garage stream that's coming up tonight at 8 on YouTube. He's going to be a part of that. But look, there's been a lot of hype around this U.S. team. We know that. There's been a lot of excitement. You and I have talked a bunch about just like, you know, look, you are the soccer guy. I grew up playing it, but I never try and fake it and like pretend that I'm an expert on this. I helicopter in when it comes to the World Cup. But this has been, just from a fan's perspective, Martino, this has been fun. This has been exciting. This has been a team that does feel different with just the energy around it. But obviously, from a bigger perspective now, this game tonight, how do you see this matchup going? Also, put in perspective for us how good this Bosnia team can be.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a nightmare for any Italian-American like myself who just had to witness Italy missing the World Cup due to losing a Bosnia on penalty kicks. Listen, Bosnia is tough. Outside of what we just saw with Senegal losing to Belgium in a heartbreaker, this is one of the best third-place teams that's in the tournament. Listen, they have a ton of creation. That is what they are good at. Unfortunately for them, they are very inconsistent when it comes to finishing in the final third. Edin Dzeko is their best guy, but it's very similar to what Portugal is like in that their best scorer is in his 40s, which is a problem. So Team USA will have a little bit of an easier job, but ultimately what Bosnia is going to be doing is trying to absorb the U.S. men's national team pressing. And the team, we saw USA do a fantastic job against Paraguay. They did a good job against Australia as well, and obviously they made 9 changes against Turkey, so you can't really take much from that one. But it's about Bosnia surviving those waves and not going down by at least 2 goals. If they go down by 2 goals, it's going to be a big hole for them to climb out of. Now, if they keep it to a 0-0 or a 1-0 sort of game, then Bosnia's in it. Because with Team USA and Tim Ream, and we posted the video for Game Day Garage, my main concern is, how does he handle the counterattack? Because you're talking about one of your starting defenders being very slow. And that is somewhere he's going to get exposed. And it kind of happened in the Australia game. It's just they're not as talented. Ultimately, Anthony Robinson, the left back, is going to help and cover for Tim Ream in those situations and moments. So you probably won't see Jedi Robinson press up as high as you normally would because of trying to cover for that. But the Bosnians are not going to be afraid. They're playing with house money. And we've seen, you know, whether or not you want to call these people journalists or reporters, talk a lot of smack about Bosnia. So they are well prepared for this one. They have nothing to lose. And the environment that they're playing in won't faze them. You know, they were in Wales to go face the Welsh. And then obviously they took down Italy in their own backyard. These guys are not scared of anyone. I don't expect them to be. But Team USA has to be clinical. That's ultimately what it comes down to. They will create their chances. They will press well. They will win the ball back quickly. Ultimately, do they finish off their chances? If they don't, then the game sort of lingers and it plays into Bosnia's hands. That's probably the worst thing that could happen for Team USA. But I fully expect them to come out there with the energy. They got the proper rest by sending a lot of guys in that third match against Chelsea. So I think it'll be a rock fight. It could be a 2-1 U.S. victory or a 2-0. We'll see what happens. But if this one gets close, I think it favors Bosnia.
Do we have concerns at all about Christian Pulisic's health?
I think I would, right? Mm-hmm. It's a calf issue, and he's missing games. He's coming off the bench. He looked lively when he came off against Turkey, but you know how they go these days, right? The guy can feel fine. Tyrese Halliburton did everything he could to get ready for Game 7 in the finals. I'm sure it was a worse injury than what Pulisic had dealt with. You step one way, and it could explode at any moment. So I think I'm not as worried as him for him, because if he's okay, he's gotten the rest since the Turkey game and he didn't really play that much against them. I think they've been going about it as best as they possibly could. And he looked fine in that game. I just hope he's stiff. Having 90 minutes in his legs, or if they go into extra time, that's where you start to question things and you wonder if he's going to play that entire time. But sure, there's always a level of concern in the modern era with calf injuries. It's probably the scariest thing that you could hear outside of someone tearing something, right? Like, oh, calf injury, because it's not just you sit 2 to 3 weeks and then you come back. Like, you have to ease yourself back in, and he's trying to rush that, and he's had a ton of injuries this year for AC Milan. So He's been trying to stay fresh the entire time. I really think it's going to take a valiant effort from him to be 100% healthy.
Are you more of a rest or rust guy, or does it kind of depend on like the sport and the situation for everybody?
It's a good question. Rest versus rust is, I would say soccer is a little different than other sports, right? Like in the NBA, I would rather take, I think you're more rusty in the NBA just because of the shooting aspect of all that kind of stuff, and it really takes a time to get in rhythm with soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. You're always going to need rest anyway. So players are really used to that, and they're able to come back into the flow of things. NBA is more of, once you get into the flow of it, you played 82 games, you're in the playoffs, you have a long stretch, you don't really get that. Soccer, there's always those stretches. There's always international break or just in between games, depending on what team you're on. I think with this atmosphere, with it being the World Cup in the United States, they're going to be coming out guns blazing. Like, look at what Mexico did. Mexico was a tremendous. That energy they brought out last night against Ecuador is incredible. We don't play at the Azteca, which is probably the best home field advantage in this tournament right now, for sure. But I expect the atmosphere to be crazy. I expect the players to be pumped up for it because this is one of the few times that you'll see them favored in a knockout game. And I fully expect them to rise to the occasion.
All right, is there a matchup before you go that if the U.S. wins that you like better? Because it's between Belgium and Colombia, right?
Let me get that for you.
I didn't mean to throw you off with that. Yeah, I didn't mean to catch you off guard with that.
It's against Belgium. So,
okay.
Listen, I'd love to play Belgium. I think today was about Senegal being very poor. Belgium has individual quality, but the way they play is not great. I think Team USA can go and take it to them. Team USA should be wanting to play anybody right now because the underrated aspect that a lot of people don't want to talk about because it's a narrative around Team USA and never being a successful national team on a higher level is you still are the host of the tournament. It is a very difficult place to play in. And the temperature over here, I'm not sure a lot of these European teams can handle it. And again, for a fact, for a lot of people that may not know this, all the tournaments that have been hosted in the Americas, an America's team had won, well, a.k.a. South America, right? We've seen Brazil won twice, and then Argentina. And then I believe Germany was the one time in Brazil when that took place in 2014. So you're really having a lot of teams struggle with that. I love Team USA's chances to get to their first ever quarterfinal. We'll see what ends up happening. The likely team on that pathway, if they were to get there, I'm not trying to jinx anything, Spain would be the most difficult out of the bunch. And obviously Croatia or Portugal are definitely better, but I think there is a great chance that they can get to the quarterfinal, and that would be my ceiling for them. Highly successful. If they get eliminated tonight, I would view this as a disappointment of a tournament because this team has more than enough to win in this round. If they get bounced in the round of 16, it is what it is. Belgium's still a good nation. But tonight is all about having one of the biggest victories in team history.
All right, Martino Puccio, host of That Milan Podcast, Game Day Garage, and very angry Celtics fan. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks, Nate. Talk later.
And a Game Day Garage live stream tonight at 8 on YouTube as well for this game. Martino will be a part of that, so it's a little live reaction along with it. If you need something to yell about or something to be excited about, it's all there. Yeah, look, you know, Wes, I know we've talked about this quite a bit. How are you feeling tonight early on as we get into this game? And PJ, I'll bring you on in here too because both of you, I love both talking to both of you guys here. I know Wes, for you specifically, you want to do it next? You know what? You don't get to tell me what to do, Wes. We're going to do it next segment, okay? That's my decision. I'm going to find out how you feel
next. Your decision, we're going to do next segment. All three of us are going to come together.
All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. This is purely done to get stuck in my head. Every time. Wes, now PJ, you're doing the same thing, you traitor. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Thanks to Martino Puccio, jumped on, thinks the U.S. is going to win 2-1. Here's the thing. I just want to see this team win just to kind of ride this momentum more. You know, look, I don't think they're going to win the World Cup. I'm also not one of those people that thinks it's impossible for them to win because nothing's impossible in sports. But the odds are insanely low, and I think we understand that given the path and how they have to play and all those things, including Christian Pulisic's health, which is when it's a calf injury, like Martino mentioned last segment. I mean, that's something that you always are worried about. That is a thing. And you know, you get to a point where you just want to see this team kind of break through to a point where there's that world credibility. Because that's what really matters, right? Like, this is fun in the moment. It was fun with that 4-1 win over Paraguay. And you know, you keep going. You're like, okay, this is now a team that, you know, people are starting to buy into. You're one of the host countries. Like, all of that makes it for a great story. But it also then gets down to where you actually are when the tournament is done. How far did you advance? What did you look like? Because that builds the credibility around the world. You can't just be a fun upstart team forever. And in some ways, like, this UN's men's national team was almost like the Wizards in some ways, right? Where it was like, oh, they're fun and they're winning and what could they be? But now the expectations are, now you got to win. Now you got to ride that momentum and you got to win. Kind of like the Wizards. Although the U.S. team did not commit $212 million to Trae Young. So there's that. Wes, where are you on this? I know are you still angry at Tim Howard for one? And two, if the U.S. loses this game and Tim Howard says, I told you so, are you going to be able to deal with that?
Tim Howard? I hardly know her. No, I'm not worried. I'm really not.
Okay.
Bosnia, according to Google, they are the lowest FIFA world rank in the FIFA world ranking. They're ranked 61. That's the lowest of any team remaining. They're not good. There is absolutely no excuse for the United States today. They're just not. I mean, this is a team that tied Canada. Canada's fine, but gave up 4 goals to Switzerland and then beat Qatar. Qatar didn't win a game. They're gritty, sure, but in this matchup, how the U.S. is playing, forget the Turkey matchup with the subs, this should be 3-1. And that
3-1, okay.
And that goal for Bosnia is late in the second half.
It's a garbage goal?
Yeah.
That's your prediction?
Yes.
All right, PJ Glasser, where are you? For those that dabble, and PJ, I know you dabble, the U.S. is a heavy favorite in this game at -650. So for those that care, there's not a lot of value in betting the U.S. to just win this game outright, if that's what you want to do. PJ, you feeling as confident as Wes leading up to this game?
I am not.
See, I knew it. You are always the pessimist, and this is what I love.
I would be lying if I said I didn't think about fulfilling my American duty and betting a little on Bosnia so the U.S. would win this match tonight. I thought about it. It was like +410 or something like that. But I think they're going to win. It's just going to be tough. You know, I mean, England had a battle today with DR Congo. We saw Germany lose to Paraguay in penalty kicks. Some of these big favorites have really struggled. The U.S., we have to remember, in these first three games, they've scored a goal in the first 10-12 minutes of every match. So they've gotten off to a fast start. They've had the crowd behind them. And when their starters were playing in the first two games, they were just able to build on that and really dominate. If, you know, 20 minutes go by, 30 minutes go by, 45 minutes go by, it's a scoreless game, then that pressure starts to build because obviously Bosnia wants to get this thing into penalty kicks. That's their best chance of winning it. So I just hope that, you know, the boys get off to a hot start tonight and Pulisic is healthy. But I think it's going to be tougher than Wes does.
Here's what I'll say, because you did compare, you know, how the DR Congo took. Hey, they made Harry Kane score 2 goals late. The DR Congo is actually known for their defense. Mm-hmm. They excel in making their opponent push far away from the box. And essentially you have to shoot from long range. Bosnia is not known for that. Like I said, they're gritty, but their offense is one of the lowest performing in the entire World Cup. So, and their grittiness. I know we've talked about how they're okay third place team. I can't. There's no excuse here. To be honest with you, I'm not even gonna get excited for this win. If we talked about in the last segment getting to the quarterfinals, I mean, this should be a breeze.
When did you? Let me rephrase this. What is the distance? What is the amount of success that this U.S. team has to have in the World Cup for it to be? And I know, look, winning the World Cup, amazing fun. I'm gonna ask both of you guys this: what distance? How many wins do they need to have? Like, what is the end result where you would consider this the bare minimum level of like, oh, this was a successful World Cup for this
team? An A plus.
Yeah, like
you aced your chances of here in the World Cup. It would be honestly getting into the semifinals for me.
Okay.
Wow. Semifinals?
So here's the one thing I will say, Peach, because Wes has been doing this for a while. Wes is like so leaned into this team.
Oh my goodness.
I think there is a cloud. The love is just clouding his judgment to a point. I'm not as bullish on this team as Wes is. I'm not there with you, Peach, where I think they're going to beat Bosnia. I'm kind of more in the 2-1 realm here, but Belgium's going to be a tough out the next round if that's, you know, as long as they get through this game, obviously. So, I mean, to me, I think getting to the round of 16 is a successful tournament for me. Look strong against Bosnia. You lose to Belgium. I think that's a much more respectable loss, and I don't want that, but I'd be a lot more comfortable with that being the case, PJ, than, you know, thinking at it. It doesn't mean that I don't want them to get to at least, like, the quarterfinals, but I'm not going to look at that as they lose in the round of 16 and, oh my God, this was a complete bust and this program's not going anywhere. I think they've shown that they are growing as a soccer program around the world now.
No question. I think for me, it depends. If Spain is the quarterfinal matchup, which it's looking like it will be if the chalk holds, and they lose a respectable game to them, if they lose 2-1 or they lose an extra time, something like that, I think it's a successful tournament. Nick, anybody would have signed up for that. If you would have asked any soccer analyst, anybody who follows the game, what would have been a successful tournament for the U.S., they say making the quarters, losing to Spain, that's a job well done. Now, with how they've looked, those first two games especially, they're a big favorite tonight. I think they're going to be like a slight favorite against Belgium. So while I agree with you, if they lost to Belgium, nobody would be surprised, but I kind of think you'd be a little disappointed because the way that Belgium's looked up to this point, needing a minor miracle to win tonight, down 2-0 in the 85th minute and coming back to win that game, and with how dominant the U.S. has been for much of group play, I think it would be a little disappointing to a lot of people if they don't get through tonight, certainly, and then against Belgium. So I'll say quarters would be successful if it's against Spain. But if chaos ensues and, you know, they get like a Croatia or they get like a Portugal or something like that, I think a lot of fans would expect them to probably win that game too. So I just, you know, with this stuff, it kind of all depends how it shakes out.
If we want to implement betting odds here, then it's definitely not going to be an A if you lose to Belgium. You can't lose a game that you're favored in and be happy with the result. Now, I was thinking, if you did say to me, you're going in the second half against Spain and have the chance to win in the quarterfinals, then that's a passing grade.
Okay.
Now, I said A.
So you'll take a respectable loss to Spain as a successful end to their run in the World Cup.
That would be an A-.
Yeah, okay. You have to. I think you have to. Because, you know, sometimes we all know in sports, like sometimes you're just like, a team's just better than you are. I mean, just flat out. And I think all of us would agree that Spain's just the better team. So if the U.S. loses to the better team, I don't see how you can really be disappointed by that. It's just like anything in sports. If you run into a team that's better than you and they beat you, you just tip your cap. And then, you know, you go back to the drawing board, you improve your roster, hope to get better. But Spain, Argentina, France, England, all these teams, if they were to play any of those four and lose, I don't see how you could be like frustrated with that result because they would be underdogs. They would be expected to lose and they're just not as good as those teams.
I'm looking at some bets right now just to maybe have something on this game. So I didn't bet
If it was a 4-0, if you lost 4-0 against Spain.
Okay. No. Well, yeah, you're saying, you don't want to see them get their ass kicked.
Right.
That's fair.
Nick, what's your prediction tonight?
I think they win 2-1. 2-1. I'm pretty much where Martino was at that point. You know, listen, this is a team that showed that they can score goals. This is a team that showed that they're riding a lot of momentum. And I take out what happened against Turkey because you didn't have the roster at full strength. You didn't have guys out there, and everybody knew it. And it was, you know, it was a 98th minute where Turkey shocks them, and you're like, okay, like that to me, that game was just a tune up. That was an exhibition game or a friendly, if you will. It was a friendly. But no, I think this team has enough talent and has shown that they are far better coached than they've been in the past, which is part of the reason why I think Tim Howard is, we agreed, Wes, I think he's a little bitter over that. But yeah, look, I think my expectations are still just a little bit lower because I understand what you have in terms of some of these other, you know, just these other teams that you're going to see in the tournament, to where I'm okay with winning one game in the knockout round. And I get it. Like, my standards are lower than both of you guys. Like, you guys expect a win over Belgium if they beat Bosnia. So I'm clearly, you know, I get it. Bosnia did not have a great game against Senegal today. They did win 3-2, but, you know, this is still a U.S. program that has not had that much success in this World Cup to where I'm like, maybe it's just me saying, you know what, I'll take anything. And that's maybe a jaded fan, a casual fan. I understand that, but I'll never sit here and pretend that I can break these games down like Martino just did. And quite frankly, the way you guys have even done it, too. I've been kind of immersed in the NBA offseason, which has gotten a little crazy, but.
You know,
I think I'm into the 2-1 realm here.
There's been a narrative with the United States and their wins. We just saw Paraguay beat Germany. Now, it's not a very dominant German team, but they would be favored against Belgium, that German team. So winning two games is a no-brainer for me for success.
Okay. Are you either one of you going – well, I know PJ won't because he's mild-mannered, but I know Wes is a psychopath sometimes. Well, Wes, will you break anything if the U.S. loses to Bosnia tonight?
There will be some foul words.
Well,
sure.
That's expected. That, of course. We all use bad words.
If the show is still going on by the time they lose, there will be no breaks.
I don't think
there'll
it's going to
be no producers.
We should be done before the game's over, right? We're done at 10.
If it ends in regulation.
Yeah.
Like, goes in extra time, Wes and I will be glued here into the studio.
You're going to have to come in and produce.
Can you guys just live stream it? Just pop on Instagram Live and just live stream it? That would be awesome. I want to see Wes break something. I want to see PJ get mad. You never get mad, PJ. I want to see you break something.
I mean, we have watched a fair share of Ravens games together. I think you have seen me get mad.
I guess, but like you're always going in. See, this is why I expected this from you, PJ, because you're a jaded Ravens fan. I was like, he's going to be jaded about this U.S. team too, and you kind of were, but then at the same time, you're like, oh, they should also beat Belgium. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm the jackass that only thinks this team might win one game and lose to Belgium. So
you know why? Because now we're at the point of the tournament where they're expected to win an elimination game, and they're usually never in a situation like that, so I don't love the fact that the pressure is on them. But then when they get in a game where it's like evenly matched, or people kind of feel like, okay, they could lose this game, I like the fact that they're just playing with house money, they have the crowd behind them. Like, I just get nervous, Nick, in sports, in these type of spots, with a team like the U.S., who, I mean, clearly, when you look at the other soccer powers, aren't used to their success.
Right.
And with how well they've played and how excited people are for the match and how far they think they can go, it's just like a little nerve-wracking, you know? Because, again, the deeper this game goes tied, that's advantage Bosnia, and that's the last thing they want. And you don't know if they're going to get tight or they're going to get anxious and they're going to start getting out of position. So that's what makes me a little nervous.
I do agree, because we saw the adversity against Turkey and they weren't able to come through. Now, I will point this out. This is an expanded tournament, and that's why there's a round of 32. So that's Bosnia wouldn't be in this. This
right.
First game would be against Belgium. So that's why I'm just thinking there's no excuse. I'm telling you, there is no excuse, especially how Bosnia has played. I mean, Switzerland is not very good. They beat a not very good Canadian team 2-1.
Wes is totally going to break something tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can just hear it already.
He
you're just like, no excuse. Like, you kind of lean, you don't lean into it first. You're building up the, and then you're just like, no excuse. They have to win. Yeah, something will get broken if they lose tonight by you. I'm sure it'll be a chair.
Wes is still a young buck. You know, he's got to learn. You hope for the best, but you expect the worst. And he's not quite there yet.
Yeah, yeah. PG hasn't been beat up enough by his teams.
Exactly.
He's an Ohio
Are you kidding
State
me?
Fans.
Exactly.
I have cried.
Well, oh, okay. Guess what? I mean, every sports fan, it goes through an emotional roller coaster with their team. What do you think? You're the only one, Wes? You're also an Ohio State fan, so you've had plenty of success, even though they've lost. You know, they won a championship every year. You just wait. Your teams will crush your soul.
Hey, Virginia,
it's how it goes.
That Georgia game in 2023, I cried when the legal hit off of Marvin Harrison Jr., who his younger brother actually committed to Ohio State.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. That's a great get
Another
for Ohio State.
Another 5-star wide receiver.
Hey, man. They pack them in there, don't they? It's just one after the other. One after the other. So, yeah, that game is going to kick off in about 24 minutes. But it actually does it relatively on time, which is nice compared to, like, any other sport. So, there'll be a lot of probably yelling depending on what happens in that game. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan, if you missed it, Jaylen Brown, about an hour ago, traded to the Sixers for Paul George, two first-round picks and two second-round picks. Now, every Celtics fan is losing their mind
because, you know, their thought is, well, there's got to be more. There's got to be more, right? There's got to be more. Might not be. Look, Paul George healthy, still a very good player, but it's clear the Sixers are, or the Celtics are, kind of looking to retool this roster a little bit, which leaves the East relatively wide open. Look, the NBA is the NBA is an animal, isn't it? I mean, free agency isn't what it used to be. It's just not that exciting, and this was going to be an offseason where kind of knew fewer teams were going to be heavily involved. Not that we haven't seen moves made, but we're not at the point right now in the NBA where, you know, you've got Durant and Kyrie going to Brooklyn. Like, that was probably the last free agency that I can think of. Again, trades are different. Just strictly free agency. You don't have those big free agent off seasons anymore for the NBA. It's just the way that the whole structure is set up. And you hear a lot about the second apron and, you know, luxury taxes and all these things, and teams don't want to get involved with a lot of that where they can. And it's just getting harder and harder to do that. And guys are re-signing with teams more because you can get way more money anyway and then asking for a trade later. But obviously the Giannis trade was big. But really, I'd argue that the most shocking, I guess, non-trade or move was LeBron just deciding he's not going to go back to the Lakers. Now, I've had the theory for, I don't know, probably about 3 years now that LeBron will go back to Cleveland, finish his career, and maybe with Bronny, although Bronny's contract, by the way, so Bronny's contract was fully guaranteed on June 29th. June 30th, it was announced that LeBron James would not come back to the Lakers. I'll just let that sink in for a second. And by the way, I don't blame him. Taking care of his kid, it's like an extra $2.5 million for him. Cool. I honestly don't blame him one bit. But it's like, you look now, and the Lakers have just... I've said this for a while about LeBron. LeBron James, especially with the Lakers, is the guy that's hanging out at your house at 1 a.m. and you had a party, you had a get-together, whatever it is, and you're cleaning up and you're putting stuff in the trash and wiping down the counters and putting the dishes in the dishwasher. Everybody else is left. LeBron is still sitting there telling stories and sticking around, and the people hosting the party, you're the Lakers, like, all right, this is great, LeBron, it's been fun. Oh my God, will you leave? It's time for us to move on. We've got to finish the night. It's time for you to go home. It's time to go somewhere else. Cleveland makes the most sense. I know there's a bunch of different teams that are involved and a bunch, like, there's all of this going on. Yes, we've got plenty of teams that I'm sure are involved. Cleveland makes the most sense. That's where he should be. But it's like the minute LeBron announced that he wasn't going back to the Lakers, they'd already signed Austin Reeves to a massive deal. They did a sign and trade for Walker Kessler because the Lakers desperately needed a big. And they go ahead and Quentin Grimes and, you know, Colin Sexton and then whoever that guy is, Mamukilashvili. I don't know how to say his name. I haven't tried. They just completely changed this roster. Marcus Smart left. Luke Kennard signed a deal. Rui Hachimura is probably going to be gone. The Lakers have committed $475 million just to that new trio alone that I just mentioned. It's unbelievable. They were just waiting. They were waiting for the floodgates to open so they had some level of freedom because they could build a roster they wanted to. They could allocate money to not LeBron James and $50-something million a year, and instead it being, you know, guys they actually want to fill out this roster. That's one of the biggest things. Look, LeBron James in his prime and even, you know, past his prime but still really good 8 years ago was LeBron, you give him what he want if you're the Lakers. You needed a star. You needed a legend. You needed somebody to come and give the Lakers relevance. And remember, when LeBron first got to the Lakers, I mean, it was LeBron and young guys. But they knew they were going to trade for Anthony Davis, and you knew this was going to be a thing. But now you've seen it. Like, the Lakers have been spending in free agency. The floodgate opened. They just went, oh, we are finally free. Now, I don't know how LeBron's going to be looked at as a Laker, right? An all-time Laker. He's going to be in the conversation, but he's not going to be ever regarded as, you know, where Kobe was, or Kareem, or Magic, or even Shaq. He's not going to be anywhere near any of those guys in terms of the regard that he's held in. But, again, LeBron James still brought, I'm going to say it, don't get mad, brought a championship, even though it was in the bubble. And I actually kind of agree with the Lakers statement where they were like, in one of the hardest conditions to win a title. I'm like, yeah, actually, let's go back and think about 2020. But, you know, this was long overdue, and it's probably going to be one last season. And I did see this, too. LeBron's considering, and I would do this, and this is so predictable, and it makes sense. LeBron is considering essentially doing a documentary of this upcoming season, which tells you final season. So it's got to make sense. So what's the storyline for LeBron? This is how you narrow down the teams. Like, the Spurs are out. Okay, well, he's not going to go to the Spurs. Cleveland, Miami, Golden State. Those are the three teams that I have sort of as, like, the prediction there, right? Now, Golden State means Anthony Davis, and that means a potential trade with the Wizards, even though the Wizards have said, uh-uh, we ain't going to do that. But should the Wizards trade Anthony Davis and just get it out of the way now? We'll look at that next. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah, let's get patriotic here. Kickoff in about 10 minutes. Do we know how accurate the kickoff actually is? Because we know most of these kickoffs.
Yeah, it's like 8:01.
It's like 8:01, right? They go pretty early. All right. That's good. Yeah, let's crank that up.
That's the best part of soccer, Nick. When they say 8 o'clock, that thing kicks off at 8. It's the greatest.
PJ, it makes me so happy. Oh, yes. Let's hear it. We need a win tonight. Yeah. God, if they lose, all this, everybody's just going to forget. And nobody wants to see that.
This building will be gone.
Oh, wow. All right, so Wes is getting real serious. See, this is what I knew. I knew deep down there was an anger inside Wes, and he was just going to be just broken if this team loses tonight.
There's no anger. I'm competitive.
Well, I like the competitiveness, but I think there is a boiling there has been a boiling rage inside of you for a while around this team, and I really noticed it once the Tim Howard quote got out there. And I think that was the point where I started to say, "Oh, he's really invested in this. Like really invested."
Oh, there he
now,
is.
Let me changed. Serious question. Now, let me ask you, because again, we're all different, and I fully admit that I helicopter in for this and I love it, but I'm not going to be a LARPer. I'm going to tell you, like, I'm not LARPing. I'm going to tell you that I, you know, watch this as a casual fan and just enjoy the entire event. Wes, have you been you watch soccer beyond just this? Regularly, semi-regularly follow it? Like, how entrenched? Okay.
Semi. I watch for sure the big games, the Premier League. I was PSG. I have Peacock, so, and there's a lot of soccer games on Peacock, so I'll turn it on usually. They're around noon on Sundays for the Premier League. So I'll turn it on.
Okay. So you are an actual soccer fan.
Yeah.
Then.
I grew up watching my brother. My brother played.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I grew up playing too, and I understand the game. I just don't, like, you know, you can understand the game of any sport if you watch it. There's another of, like, the matchups and all the stuff we talk about for the NFL or the NBA or baseball or, you know, anything else. Peej, what about you?
I just watch the major tournaments, Nick. That's about it.
But see, this is good. I think we all need to just allow ourselves to admit where we stand with it, and that's okay. Because there are some soccer fans that welcome it. They're just like, hey, love having you on. We love this beautiful game. Then there's others that are like, go back to where you came from. And it's like, dude, you want the sport to grow. You want to welcome people in. It doesn't make any sense to act that way. Now, again, if somebody's trying to fake it.
I don't know if that's big in the U.S. I feel like we've all come together.
Well, okay, so let me say this. It's not big in the U.S. in the sense that it's about, like, the MLS. It's more about people that are hardcore in, like, Premier League or, any of these other leagues. I think there's a level of arrogance that can be there from some, not all. It is a reputation that does surround very hardcore soccer fans that don't like to welcome outsiders, which has just never made any sense to me whatsoever. I love the NBA. You can tell me, hey, I don't know much, but I loved watching the Knicks and Spurs in the finals. Cool. Welcome to enjoying the game. I hope you keep watching it. I want to see the game grow. Like, I just never understood that. My brother is a huge Caps fan, and I remember talking about this a while ago, and I was just like, yeah, I don't understand why there's this level of, like, go back to where you came from, you're an outsider, why do you love our sport? And he has that view of, like, no, I mean, we want people to come in and love the sport and grow, and it's like, that to me is the right attitude to have. Now I get it, if somebody's sitting there and arguing with you and they don't know what they're talking about and they're just being a dum-dum, that's fine, call them out. But that's different than just, like, people getting caught up in the moment. It's like people love dubstep when dubstep came out forever ago. Oh, yeah, I've loved it since it was an underground thing. Oh, I was listening to it on SoundCloud. Shut up. Just let people enjoy it if they enjoy it. I've never understood that mindset. But you're right. I don't think, Wes, that it involves necessarily, like, it doesn't involve people that are, like, U.S. soccer fans as much. I think that that is less prevalent with that.
Yeah, because we're not. I didn't feel that way with the WBC either. You know, people. You know, you don't watch Major League Baseball every single day, but you'll tune in because the United States are competing for a world championship. I don't, because soccer is not huge here, it's a patriotic duty in a way to watch the games. Yeah. Get a jersey, get a
shirt. I like that. It's a patriotic duty, yes.
Not everything has to be war. Right. Like, it just now, doesn't have to be that
now,
way.
Since I am not in the studio there with you, what jersey do you have on right now?
I got my USA jersey.
Okay.
Yeah, right. The one that you saw the other day.
Okay, same one. Good.
What I find interesting, because the USA jersey they have is the flag. The USA flag is actually touching the ground on the field.
Oh, can't do that.
Which I don't appreciate.
Can't do that. Yeah, can't do that. Huh.
Which Saudi Arabia, they don't allow it. They don't allow their flag to touch the ground.
Well, yeah, the U.S. flag's not supposed to touch the ground either.
It's not.
That's part
That's
of the ceremony.
That's why I'm actually shocked that it's actually touching the ground.
Yeah, it's not supposed to in
any way. You see that?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I actually need to put it back on because I'm sitting. Yeah, I got to. All right, hold on.
I'm a little disappointed in that, actually.
It's probably a detail that was overlooked that's now going to be like a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That's weird. I've never seen that.
By the way, I'm going to watch it on Peacock right in front of me, so I'm going to have the Spanish call the entire time.
Electric.
I do watch some games.
It's fun. Watching the Spanish calls of some games is so much fun.
It is.
It's just, it's exciting. Yeah, it's exciting.
Their goal calls last about 30 seconds for the English version, 3 seconds.
It's iconic. Yeah, it's an iconic way. Yes, it's iconic. Absolutely, absolutely iconic. All right, so here we go. National anthem going on now. There's Christian Pulisic. Now, here's the one issue that we're going to have, guys. We might be on different times here. So we're going to have to see what the difference is between what I'm watching and what you're watching in terms of the delay.
Because we are cable in the studio.
You're going to be ahead of me. Yeah. You're going to definitely be ahead of me. So, yeah, because I'm streaming.
Which is much better for us.
Oh, yeah, so that's good. So then I can react, or you guys can, like... Just don't spoil anything for me, okay? I don't need any of that nonsense.
We'll be celebrating in the studio.
Yep.
Well, yeah, you guys can do it with the mic off, and then that's fine, and I won't know, so it'll actually be perfect. Yeah, so that's good, because I'm going to have to react to it live.
Exactly.
But you guys can take a second, walk away, and then come back on, and we can all celebrate when the U.S. wins this game handily. 6-0. How about that? No.
I know. I was going to say, we need to get Zabe on the line. Yeah, what is he like, 11-1 tonight?
Zabe, when we did that, with Zabe's prediction of 9-1 for that second game, I was just like, you're such a jackass. It was such a Zabe prediction, but it's exactly what it is. Look, I mean, the momentum's real around this team right now. There's no question. This is, you know, there's a lot of excitement. And you know, listen, to go on and win some games in the knockout round, being one of the host countries, I think adds an extra layer to it. I think that brings something extra to the table. You know, so it's hard to explain. You want to have bandwagon fans, but then you want to keep them, right? So right now you're bringing on a lot of bandwagon fans. It's just a question of, do they then get what they came for, right? Which is winning games. It's just that simple. Like I've said that for years about the Nats. When the Nats first got to DC, they weren't winning. They started winning. You got a lot of bandwagon fans, but then you wanted to keep them. Problem is, they've been in a perpetual rebuild for 100 years, even though, again, a couple games over 500, this is a team that's exceeding expectations. But, you know, that's what's really important, is being able to take the momentum and bring that forward so people will stick on this and keep watching. So we will see. The game is about to kick off, and that kickoff is coming up. Oh, yes. Yes, that kickoff's coming on. In 4 minutes, about 4 minutes, because they do it on time. They do it on time.
I'll also say this. Mm-hmm. The World Cup being in the U.S. is such a big difference. We got to see the World Cup several years ago in Qatar. Even if it was in the U.K., 90% of the games have been from noon to 9. That gives people the opportunity to watch it daily.
That's a great
point. And actually get into soccer. We haven't had that since 1994. So this is a great opportunity for people to actually invest themselves into a new sport.
And hopefully it grows the game. All right, kickoff coming up next. Nick Ashew on The Fan.